So if you could be here around 9, that would be great. Okay?
Well, listen here.
Hello, and welcome to Love After Lockup. Haha, okay. Today, Mr. O and I will be discussing Season 1, Episodes 3 and 4 of Life After Lockup, where we will talk about Lacey coming to her senses, Tony's slumber party in a car, Lamar's love of pie, Josh's mommy issues, Michael's fake sickness, and more. Starting next week, we will release new episodes on Tuesday. If you like our podcast, please leave us a rating so other bunkies can find us. Thanks for listening and enjoy.
Hello, Miss H.
Hello, Mr. O. How are you?
I'm not doing too bad. Better than most people on this show. Jeez.
Right. Ooh. You ready to talk about ex-cons?
But so many ex-cons. And the thing is I'm surprised, not surprised actually, it's what I expect a reality show to surprise me in this specific way, is on how many of these relationships, like the ex-cons might not even be the worst people.
Oh, no. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah, it's kind of sad, but it is pretty true. So where do you want to start?
Let's start with the people that weren't in the episodes we talked about last time, so we can kind of get my intro to them. And so let's start with Cheryl and Josh.
All right, sure.
Because it looked like there was a lot of background to that one. And that just...
Okay.
It looked like a whole unholy mess, like as they all are. But this one seemed particularly confusing as to what happened in the past.
All right. So if you're just joining us, Mr. O has not watched Love After Lockup. So he's joining us with Life After Lockup. So he doesn't quite have all the background knowledge of these couples from the first two seasons. So I am here to fill him in, answer his questions, hopefully fill in the gaps for him and everyone else who's just joining us.
So I gathered that were they ever married? Were they just engaged? Were they just together?
No, they were never married.
Okay.
So Cheryl has a problem. Her problem is that criminals really turn her on. So she had to do some kind of report on some kind of, like, I want to say Ted Bundy. And then she was just like hot for convicts after that. Mm-hmm. So she seeked out a convict, and so enter Josh. So she was corresponding with Josh and things were getting really serious really fast, like to the point where it was weird. Like she wanted, and I quote her, Josh to put a baby in her immediately. So they had suggested that he give her his part in a plastic baggie during a visit. But she claims that she just threw it away. So already that kind of tells you this couple is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So then I guess the only other part you really need to know is they had broken up at the end of their season. And it was because he was just like, oh, my gosh, she's just too much and I can't handle it. So he was just, you know, ready to throw in the towel. He just thought she was too demanding. She has a weird relationship with his mom because apparently she was getting friendly with the mom at one point. And then the mom's boyfriend, Kenny, tried to hit on her the way she sees it. And so the mom was saying, oh, she's trying to get with my man. And so even they refer to it in their segments, you know, that Kenny's trying to hook up with her or more so vice versa. So that caused conflict, and that's the reason why Josh's mom does not like Cheryl at all.
Okay, and I don't know. It seemed like she definitely does not like Cheryl very much, but it seems like Cheryl dislikes the mom more. Like, I feel like that is...
Yes, that's actually true. It's because she thinks that the mom is undermining their relationship.
Okay. But she also thinks that everybody's undermining her relationship. Because the first time we see Cheryl in these two episodes, she's going to visit her sister. And her sister knows she's leaving Texas. So I guess Cheryl and her sister both live in Texas currently.
Mm-hmm, they do.
But she thinks she's driving back to Michigan, where they're originally from.
Right.
To be with her parents. But that's when she tells her sister that she's actually driving to Colorado to be with Josh.
Right. And the sister has never been supportive.
Right. And the sister up to this point had thought they, yeah, were broken up and everything, right? They didn't even know they were, she didn't know they were back together. Okay.
Yes. I think we're all new to the fact that they're back together again. And the sister specifically, she's a correctional officer. So they definitely played that up the first time they were on the show because, you know, the sister's like, you should know better. I know better. I've seen how they are. Like, these are not the people you want to date or have in your children's life. So the sister's been trying to talk sense to her. Into her for a really long time.
Right. And Cheryl seems super, super, super defensive about people calling her stupid. Like, don't say it's stupid. It's not stupid. I'm not stupid, which is
right.
a good sign when you have to repeatedly say, I'm not stupid.
Yeah. So Cheryl kind of has a very, like, sketchy past. And this is stuff that's come out more so on social media, more so than the actual show. Because when her and Josh broke up, they started basically slandering each other on social media. So it kind of came out that Cheryl used to be a stripper and her dad would drive her to her work. So weird things like that came out. So they're, yeah, like you were saying, it's not even the ex-cons we necessarily have to worry about. There's some questionable life decisions made by the partners of these people.
Definitely, definitely. Yeah, so that's all we had for them in the first episode was Cheryl talking to her sister Lacey, and Lacey being like,
yes.
"This is a bad idea because it's a terrible idea." And
oh, it is.
just awful. And so then we see her get to Colorado.
Oh wait, before that, how could you possibly forget? She has a friend who is a clown, who is. Featured on this show multiple times.
I think I might have fast forwarded through that. I didn't see that at all.
What? You missed her clown friend, Tony? Are you kidding me?
I did not see clown friend. It must have been... Okay, so something this show does is it has like little 30-second segments mid-commercial.
Oh, that is true. Maybe it was one of those segments, but...
Yeah.
Tony is a straight up like... When I say a clown, I mean like face painted white... is wearing a nose, like dressed up in a plaid vest clown. And for someone who is a clown, he's probably the most level-headed person in Cheryl's life.
Probably. Okay. I did not see clown. Now I got to go back and watch it again. All right. did we learn anything from Clown Tony, or was it just the existence of Clown Tony?
I do kind of feel like Clown Tony, it's more so like, hey, this is hilarious. You have... someone who's making good life decisions. I mean, maybe other than your profession. I don't know. Maybe clowns are doing pretty well for themselves.
I'm not gonna degrade anybody's profession. Clown is fine. If you can make it as a clown, good for you.
Right. So I was going to say that Tony is constantly, Tony is constantly saying, you know, the right things that you should to Cheryl. Saying things like, oh, Cheryl, you just need to be really careful. You have kids. Are you sure this is like something you want to pursue? And he's level-headed. He doesn't really take sides so much, but like he's not Lacey telling her she's an idiot.
Okay.
You know, he's a little bit more diplomatic about the situation.
But you say the point of Tony is to say that in this whole storyline, the person who has the most sense is a literal clown.
Yes, pretty much. I'm pretty sure that's why they keep bringing him back.
Okay. It's the symbolism of it all. Okay. So then we do get to Colorado. Yeah.
Sure.
And the first thing that happens is Cheryl's car breaks down. And
that is just so unfortunate. It really is. Because it just makes their situation so much worse.
Oh, no. It is unfortunate. But at least in my head, I was like, well, it could have broken down in Oklahoma. That'd have been worse.
Oh, yeah. True.
She at least mostly got there. She was like something like 3 miles away from him when she got there. So it was like, if your car is gonna break down, that's probably the best place.
It just makes everything so awkward though, because the relationship with Tina, Josh's mom, is so strained as it is.
Mm-hmm.
And now Josh puts it on Tina to be driving them around. And he's basically blackmailing her by saying, well, you know, we're going to be living here until we can find a place. How are we going to find a place unless you drive us to look for places?
Yeah. Kind of stuck with us. Mm-hmm. And like, I don't know. The other thing I caught was, so the laundromat, right? They were in a laundromat when he got the call. Did you see that there was a sign on the laundromat that said vapors not allowed?
Oh, gosh. Why am I not surprised?
It wasn't that it said vapes not allowed because, oh, yeah, they vape. Like, they vape, right?
Sure.
It was spelled V-A-P-O-R-S, like vapors.
Oh, gosh. Okay, that's even worse. No, I didn't notice that.
Like, oh, I have the vapors.
Oh, goodness. So when Wrong show. When Cheryl meets up with Josh, she just starts making out with her guy, like with her kid right there. It's just like come on.
It's like a 3-year-old. It's not like some kid who can like watch for themselves. It's just like the kid's going to be running into traffic while they're necking and like, whatever. He's my man. Isn't it hot? Yeah.
Oh, I can see her saying that. So I don't know if you noticed, but she is wearing a ring. She has like a big ring. I don't think it's real, but I do want to make a note because this was something that she talked about on her season. She had to buy that herself. Josh was not buying her a ring. He has no means to buy her a ring.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So she had to buy it herself.
I don't know. Josh does not strike me as somebody I'd want to be anywhere near either. He struck me as very selfish, very self-centered, like from the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and one of the things he said, he's like, oh, you know, we broke up and I just couldn't find another girl as loyal as Cheryl. And I was like, so I want to know what loyalty means to this guy. Because I feel like to a lot of sketchy guys, loyalty means putting up with all of my bullshit. Like any bullshit I throw at them, they will take it and shut up. And that's, I call that loyalty.
I think that Cheryl definitely is someone who's down. Like, she's a ride or die bitch. So mm-hmm. Let me just give an example from their season. Josh, he's in jail because he stole money from a bank, right? So while police are in pursuit of Josh, he decides, hey, I'm going to get caught. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take some of this money and I'm going to hide it, like, behind this tree. I don't really remember, mm-hmm. but it was in a very specific spot. So, you know, he's out of jail and he's like, okay, I remember I stashed at least $1,000 in this one spot. So he thinks, well, maybe it'll still be there. So he buys a shovel with Cheryl and basically sends Cheryl out because he couldn't go out there because it had flooded and Josh is wearing an ankle monitor. So he can't get it wet. So he can't go into this little muddy patch or whatever to dig up for this whatever money. Mm-hmm. So he tells Cheryl from afar, it's over there, go dig. Cheryl does it and says she smells like sewage. So, I mean, if you're judging your loyalty based on that, like maybe I would consider it like a ride or die.
Yeah, because that makes her an accessory to the bank robbery and she could go to jail
now
too.
Yeah, right.
Forget the sewage, yeah.
That's the other thing. She keeps referring to herself, them, as Bonnie and Clyde.
Yeah, I noticed that. Did she watch the end of that movie? Did she know how that ended?
I know. I don't know. She's the kind also that's like Romeo and Juliet. It's like, well, you know how that ends, right?
Again, watch the rest of the movie.
It's not good.
Yeah.
It's not good.
But yeah. I don't know. At least in what I saw, because not knowing the history, I was definitely on Team Tina with her get out. You got 3 days. I'll put you up for 3 days and then get the hell out. I'm okay with that.
Well, I'm okay with that because I'm more of a tough love kind of person. So from that perspective. But I would say Tina's no prize either. Like if you see Kenny, it's just the two of them. You're like, wow, you guys are something else. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
That's true. That's true.
Kenny was really trashy too. You haven't seen him yet.
I haven't seen him too, but
he kind of reminds me of Bo.
Okay. But people that, I don't know, Uncle it's Bo. Really unusual for somebody, you know, that ends up in prison with the criminal background repeatedly, bank robber, you know, all that stuff. It's really unusual for that person to come from a really stable, good set of parents, you know? Like, not every parent is going to knock it out of the park, but, you know.
Yeah. I was going to say that Josh, other than his criminal past, he doesn't seem like the sharpest tool in the shed, but there's nothing that he's done that seems especially terrible from the first season.
Okay.
Like, he seems okay. I have more neutral feelings about him.
Interesting.
He doesn't seem like an obvious con, you know?
Uh-huh, uh-huh. So what did you feel about Tina's rules for the house? She set them down and set the rules down. Did you hear what her three rules were?
No, what were they?
I think it was only two rules, actually. It was like, you're cooking and cleaning for yourselves.
Okay, fair.
And you got to be home by 9, because I'm assuming that's the terms of the parole, is he has to be home
yes.
by 9.
Yeah.
And it's basically, cook and clean for yourselves and don't get him thrown back in jail.
Right. I think that's more than fair.
Oh, totally. But Cheryl, like, went off on her. Mainly because she was like, what do you think, I'm fucking stupid? Of course I'm going to have him home by 9.
Oh, I do remember this part. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, and that's the thing is, like, I just feel like a little respect, Cheryl, please. Mm-hmm. You know, you're living in her house. She's doing you a favor.
Yeah.
And, you know, you just really can't disrespect her like that. At first, in her interviews, she said, oh, as soon as we move out, I'm going to tell her off. And then all of a sudden she's telling her off and they haven't even stayed there. So... Uh-huh.
Why is she under the impression that Tina is going to sit there and listen to her tell her off? Like, I can imagine a situation like that. It's like, you moved out and you got, well, it's now we're going to tell you off. I'd be like, I'm going to shut the door in your face and I'm not going to listen to you tell me off. Like, what are you doing? This is, bye. You're going to start yelling at me. I'm going to leave. Bye. Yes, I don't know.
Yeah, but according to Josh, you know, they're both crazy as hell and bossy as hell. They want you to do everything they want. It's like, well, Josh... Do you have a type? Mommy issues?
Mommy issues.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I didn't think about that. Yeah. My girlfriend and mom are just too much alike. Oh, man.
That's concerning. That is very concerning. Especially, like, it would be different if you're like, oh, they're both very kind. They're both very generous. It's like, oh, no, they're both bossy and crazy. It's like, no, that's not where you want them to be alike.
Yeah.
That seems terrible.
Right. Their glaring flaws line up perfectly. It's like so bad.
That's why they don't like each other.
Let's talk about the other couple that was new for this week, these episode 3 and 4. That's Clint and Tracy.
Goodness.
Yeah, I went with them second because this just seems sad. This would, like,
it really is. It really is. I mean, people really like them. And I wouldn't see even they like them as a couple. I think really a lot of people really respond to Tracy.
Okay.
There's something about her where there's a lot of sympathy because mm-hmm. they feel bad that she's an addict.
She's an addict.
Think people recognize that she's in this situation because she's an addict and she's really struggling with her addiction. She wants to be a good person. She wants to not be addicted, you know, but that's why she keeps mm-hmm. on going into jail. It's not like she's on some crazy crime spree. You know, maybe she's doing some petty theft stuff to, like, you know, score. But for the most part, like, I think she's kind of a likable person. Maybe not so much in these episodes, because you're right. It's just sad. Everything about it was just sad.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the issue with, I want to say, addicts that are addicts for a really long time, and they can get people to, you know, support them, is... They a lot of the time they really get good at talking a good game and making it really sound like they're trying to be better people so that people will keep helping them and they just need one more chance and this time I'm really going to learn. And not to say that isn't true when they say it, but I definitely have known, you know, addicts where eventually it's like, yeah, I've heard you say this already 20 times and it hasn't changed yet. And it seems like that's kind of the situation they're at.
I can see that, and that's hard for me because I'm someone who... likes to think the best of people. Mm-hmm. So when they say things like that, it's like, oh, you have hope that there's change. But I definitely see where you're coming from. So, so their story is they met online through like a prison pen pal situation. Clint claims she is the most beautiful woman he's ever seen. And he keeps on calling her his goddess. So there's like this definite thing where he just always refers to her as that.
Mm-hmm.
And she gets out of prison. And if you see her when she first gets out of prison, she's got a little bit of, you know, extra loving around the waist, if you get what I'm saying. And she basically dips out before their wedding. And Clint waits for 4 or 5 hours. She ends up showing up. They get married. And wedding night, she decides to go on a bender.
Mm-hmm.
So she basically leaves him in the middle of the night, leaves her wedding ring with him, steals the rental car, you know, goes off and basically gets arrested again. So he doesn't see her for a few months. And when, and I actually, I shouldn't say a few months. It's unknown, I think, to me how long it was. But when you see her next, she is skinny. She does not look good. She's starting to look how you saw her.
Uh-huh.
The hair is a little bit better, but yeah. So it was them pretty much trying to rebuild their life. She was gaining a little bit more weight after she got out of prison, so it kind of seemed like she was getting healthier. But let's be real here. Like, look at Clint. I mean, the speculation is that Clint is a drug addict too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it just so happens that he's got a better situation where, you know, he has financial support from his family where he doesn't have to do all these things to score. And so he managed to keep himself out of trouble.
Right.
Whereas Tracy doesn't have those same kind of benefits. And so, I mean, even look, Clint and Tracy got arrested at the same time. Clint was in jail for a little while.
Right.
He got out sooner than Tracy did.
Well, I mean, that's yes, he did, but it's also because I think he just had a bowl and she had meth. Like, it was different charges.
Right.
And because of that, it compounds it, though, because when they do get arrested, she has a lot more priors than him. And so she gets held more and her bond is higher. And so it does, even if it's differential in what they had, like, it does, I see what you're talking about.
I don't know. Clint just looks rough. Like,
mm-hmm.
How old do you think Clint is? I mean, they told you, but how old do you think he looks?
Oh, geez. It's tricky because parts of him look different ages. Like, it depends on what part of my body, what part of his body I'm looking at. But, like, yeah.
His face.
Yeah, he has the skin of somebody who's over 50. Like, for real.
Oh, yeah. His dad had better skin than him.
Yeah.
I mean, but then again, his dad, his body looks more of someone who's older. But Clint is just, like, his face looks so aged.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't look, you're not 38 and look that way.
Right.
That's just not
something
that happens.
No. The hair, I mean, the hair is the hair. Because, I don't know, it was weird because it depended on, you know, when they, and it's tricky too because they put him in the interviews and he looks a lot better because they make him up and they do his hair and they do his hair and, like,
I wouldn't
that
even
weird,
say that much better.
They put him in the faux hawk and everything. The faux hawk makes him look like he's trying to be younger, but when his hair is all, like, flopped down. And that, like, flat,
you know,
Boris Johnson type thing, it does make him look older. But, okay, so what was up with the thing Tracy was wearing? I didn't understand how that was connected to an eating disorder, like she said.
Right. Okay, so I had said something about that on Reddit a little while ago, and then someone responded, and this makes way more sense. They said that that's basically a suit they make you wear if you're on suicide watch because you can't use your garments to kind of tie it into anything that can strangle, hang yourself.
Right. And you can't rip it. Yeah.
Right. So that's what they were saying. They were saying that they were just trying to cover that part up. And so say that it was, because I thought the same thing. It was like, how does that help?
Yeah, what kind of eating disorder?
Wearing, like, a Velcro vest.
Yeah, that makes more sense. You're right, that makes more sense.
Yeah.
But
yeah, that makes more sense. Which is still sad. You're on suicide watch.
Yeah, yeah. So Clint goes to his parents' house to drop them the news, and he does it in, like, the worst way possible. Because I forget exactly how he said it, but when he's saying something happened to Tracy, to his mom, he really made it sound like she was dead. Like, the way he was saying it, and she was like, until she's in jail. You could see the mom go, oh, thank God. Like, the way he said it was like, oh, she's gone. She's not here anymore. It's like, what?
Well, and that's what he said. He said only two places could keep them apart, death or jail. And then just stares at his mom.
And she's like, which one is it?
She's like, jail? Question mark? Maybe? Hopefully?
Right. Which is funny because it's not the only time this episode that somebody terribly breaks the news, makes somebody else think somebody's dead.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So Alice Clint's mom has always thought poorly about the relationship. She's never said anything specifically about Tracy. I think she's just worried that since Tracy is a drug addict, that she's bringing Clint down.
Mm-hmm.
And so she said from the very beginning that they shouldn't be together.
I mean, she's kind of got a point. And it seems like, I don't know, the parents were both more or less relieved that Tracy was back in jail. Like,
yeah,
just kind of like, which is, I mean, they're like, okay, she's more likely she's going to get help in jail than she's going to get, than anything's going to happen out here. And she's going to be, you know, not with you again. Like you said, the idea that she's going to bring Clint down, she's not going to be bringing him down if she's not with him.
Right. But I kind of wonder, like, are the parents really that clueless that Clint is also into drugs? Like, true. How could your son look that rough and you kind of overlook or at least pretend to overlook the fact that he's not the only one with the, or Tracy, she's not the only one with the problem here.
Oh, yeah. It's not even their just son the looks, clearly it's his, the has way a problem. He acts.
Yes.
Like the way he acts talks.
All jittery all the time.
Yeah, and it looks like he's really struggling to come up with any kind of thoughts to finish his sentence. Like, it seems pretty, I don't know, seems pretty obvious to me. And you can't fool yourself when they're like, there's no way he could be this into somebody that's this into drugs and not like be there too, you know?
So he actually used to have an actual job. He was a hotel worker. I don't want to say manager because I think his ex-wife was actually the manager. And his parents own some kind of deli. And so I'm pretty sure he works at the deli now. So it's kind of like he's, I don't know, he's able to do these things because I feel like his parents, in a way, enable him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, they absolutely do. There's no way you can do... There's no way. They have to be giving him money. Because if he doesn't have a job anymore, he's not getting money anywhere. And it has to be coming from them.
Right.
I don't know. It's tough.
Yeah. I feel bad for Clint's parents, though. Yeah. They're dealing with a lot.
Yeah. This one, as I said, this one was just mostly sad. So,
yeah. It really was. Okay. Let's move on.
Let's not skip to the one. I don't know. They're all pretty sad. All right. Let's go to, because I really want to save... I really want to save my favorite for last. That's the most fun one.
Oh, you have a favorite already.
Oh, I definitely have a favorite. For this, these two episodes, it was my favorite. So let's save that for last. Let's go to Angel and Tony, which was also sad, but in a different way.
Yes. I was going to say, it's sad, but you don't feel sorry for anyone involved.
Right, right.
You know, like, I have zero sympathy for any of these people, Tony and
absolutely.
Angel, at least.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Because... I believe you called it last time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I said Tony's probably going to sleep in his car out in front.
And then Angela's going to take him back.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. And I said that too. Right. So Angela's dressed up for work. And I thought she actually looked kind of cute with her hair up and the glasses.
And the glasses? I know, she did. She actually looked way better than she looked before.
Yeah, right? I'm like, this should be your look. Because her hair didn't look like stringy and like down, you know? It's like she had it up in this cute little ponytail and, mm-hmm. yeah, and with glasses.
And some people look better with glasses. Just is what it is. And like, I always feel like the people who look best in glasses are always the ones who want to take the glasses off, like, as soon as they can. Like, oh, my glasses look terrible.
Yeah, right. So Tony starts his begging again. He was like, I never meant to hurt you. And then this is what annoys me. He keeps claiming that this is his house too. It's like, no, it isn't your house. Just because you put this address down for your parole does not make it your house.
If you're not chipping in for rent, you're staying at her house.
Yeah.
I give you that. But he just, I don't know.
Doubt he's given her any money ever.
It's so crazy. This is one example. It comes up numerous times in these episodes of people who are able to convince other people of things and sway other people with the stupidest words. Like, how, what?
Oh, sure.
He's just like, but I love you. I love you. But I love you.
And he just repeats that.
And you can see her starting to break down. I was like, he's not even making an argument. He isn't convincing you of anything. Right. He's just saying, I love you with a dead-eye voice, not even convincingly. I don't understand. I feel like I lose too many arguments I've missed out on opportunities just because I thought to myself, well, that wouldn't work at all. That would be dumb. And turns out, no. You could just say dumb shit and people will go with you sometimes.
So one thing that kind of makes me feel like the whole sleeping outside thing was staged is that Tony doesn't have a car. He has a motorcycle that Angela bought him.
Right.
But since when does Tony have a car? This is new.
Yeah.
So whose car is he sleeping in? Is Angela giving him the keys to her car just so he can sleep out there?
She might have. She might have. Possibly. He could sleep in the car. I could believe that, because especially the way when Faye comes in, right, and Angela's like, well, he slept in the car last mm-hmm. night. And she's like, oh, so he's gonna sleep in the couch tonight and your bed tomorrow night? Like,
yeah, I know. She knows.
Because he just makes a sad puppy face and Angela gives up. Like,
ugh. That sad puppy face does nothing for me. I'm just like, wow.
Oh, sometimes it's sad puppy face because I have students try to give me sad puppy face when they're trying to get their grades.
You're like, no, that definitely doesn't work.
Oh, sometimes it either works or it infuriates the person that you're trying to give it to.
Yeah. I usually tell my students, it's like, I like to feel generous because I'm feeling generous, mm-hmm. Not because you asked me. And when you ask me, it makes me not want to do it.
Yes.
It's weird. It's a weird psychology like that. Yeah. So Donna Faye, she says that, you know, Angela sounds like she's wimping out, that, you know, she thinks that she's going to give in. And Angela, step one, she puts the ring back on. Mm-hmm. That's when I knew. I was like, nope, she has no intention of breaking up with him for real.
No, she's
the
not.
Ring is back on. Come on.
In like less than a day? Come on. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Donna Faye knows. She says he's conning you. He's conning you. And he is. We all know he is. But I don't know. I feel like if she can't see that, she doesn't want to see it.
Oh my gosh. Yes. And so we've talked about this number of times on our other podcast about, you know, people being able to identify things that make them love the other person.
Mm-hmm.
And Angela, you know, she says, you know, the way he touches her, he makes her feel like he loves her regardless of the hustle. And it's kind of like, that's not a reason to love him.
No. Right. You no. are the hustle.
Feelings betray you too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
You are 100% the hustle, especially when she resigns herself. It's just so sad to like think that lowly of yourself, because at the end she's like, well, you know, he loves to the best of his ability. And it definitely kind of, you know, gives that air of Angela thinking, I don't deserve any better than this. This is what I get. Like,
right. And that makes me so sad because, you know, look like Jerry is like waiting in the wings.
Uh-huh.
He would take her and he seems like a normal guy. And he seems to really care about her. I just don't understand why she's wasting her time with Tony. But, you know, she says, love always wins. And I said, wins what? What are you fighting against here? What is happening?
Reason. She's fighting against reason. Love always wins against reason. It's like, oh.
So Donna Faye appropriately says, well, that's a crock of shit.
Because it is. She's absolutely appropriate.
Yep.
Oh, right. Andrea and Lamar didn't have very much.
Well, you know what? Lamar cannot be swindled with cake.
They give him cake. I don't know if it's... He definitely wasn't swindled. They weren't swaying him with that cake at
no,
all.
No, because he wants pie.
Oh, that's right.
Because the poor man wants pie. He cannot be swindled with cake. But pie, that's
but
another
pie,
story.
Pie, perhaps. Perhaps. Perhaps if they gave right. him pie. Maybe if they convince him that white people make really good pie, he might want to stay in Utah.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, maybe. And I would think like that would be a place where you could get really good pies in Utah.
You
because
think?
I feel like that's an area where canning preserves is a thing, you know? And so it's like when you live in those kinds of communities, I feel like pies are a thing.
I would definitely think pies. Baking and pies, definitely. They don't drink, so they gotta do something. I definitely imagine you could get some good pie.
Yeah, I would think so, too. I don't know firsthand, but that would be my assumption. They seem like that kind of community.
It's one of those places where I don't know that you could buy good pie. Like, they're not going to have a great... I don't think the bakeries are going to be that great, but I think the homemade pies mm-hmm. are going to be top-notch.
Actually, the best coffee cake I've ever had in my life was at a cafe in Salt Lake. And it was just so good. I can't even describe, like, what I ate, but it was just, like... really, really delicious. It was over like Beaver Creek, so I don't know. It was a special too. They don't always have it, but my friend lived in the area and said that they always have good baked goods.
Mm.
So I believe it. Utah, good baked stuff there.
Mm-hmm.
Their house is so nice.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I can understand why Andrea wants to live there instead of LA, where I'm sure the same amount of money doesn't get that far.
Oh, I'm sure it doesn't get anywhere near that far. I always note that when I visit anybody in the Midwest and they're like, your house is huge. This would be $1 million house where I am. And they're like, no, it wouldn't. I was like, yes, it would. Like, oh, it's not that big. Holy crap, it's a freaking mansion.
Yeah. So Lamar, he starts to bring up why he doesn't want to move to Utah. He says that diversity. He wants diversity.
I don't know that he does want diversity. He just wants black people. Like, I think if you said, look, there is diversity. We have, there's this whole Latin community. He would not be swayed by that. If you said there's this whole Asian community, he would not be swayed by that. And not that that's wrong. It's definitely not wrong of him to mm-hmm. want to be around people like the people he grew up with from his culture. That is totally a legit thing to want.
I think it's more so about standing out. You know, sure. You don't want to feel like you're the freak of the town because everybody's staring at you all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like if he was the only or if they were the only black family there and no one ever like really paid attention or cared, maybe he wouldn't feel so weird about it, you know, but it's one of those things where I think people just it's one of those things they can't help looking at something that's different or things people that they don't really see very
it's
often.
It's not even the looking. Like, didn't Andrea have a friend that was like, oh, I'm so excited to finally have a black friend. Like,
yeah, that's true.
I totally understand not wanting to be, you know, immersed in a group of white people where you're the black friend. Like, that's not I wouldn't want any part of that.
Right. Yeah, I can see that. Especially the way he grew up, because he definitely grew up way more thug than
yes.
any of these people in Utah.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like just based on that, it wouldn't even matter if he was white. I feel like he still would feel like he didn't fit in.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's a little bit easier to put your finger on it when it's race than when it's like,
yeah,
like broader cultural concern.
Sure. But yeah, I feel like people aren't going to relate to him and his wannabe rapping, gangbanger thug life ways.
Right.
Like, you don't get a whole lot of those in Utah.
No, that's true. That's true.
Yeah. So, but they continue to argue, and then Nyla tries to break up the fight. So it's just like Nyla and Tennyson. It's like they are the smart ones of this family.
Uh-huh.
And it's sad that it has to be that way.
Right. She doesn't even, like, try to break it up. She just comes out and is like, could y'all stop fighting? It's just, yeah. This is dumb. We're here to celebrate. This
right.
is a party.
Well, she has a point.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess this argument is going to have to happen at some point, though.
Yeah.
Because they're still figuring out where Lamar's going to live.
Yeah. Yeah. Or everybody's going to live because she does not want to be separate from him. Then she, you know, she's gonna have to make a decision whether she what matters more to her, being in Utah or staying with him, and what matters more to him. So somebody's gonna have to make a decision.
I don't know. I just feel like she has made so many bad decisions already, and I don't really know what would be the best decision in this case because she already, you know, forced her kids out of high school
mm-hmm.
to move to LA for what, a year,
yeah,
and then moved them back.
Move them back.
And I mean, that's traumatic enough. So I understand that, you know, she wants to stay in Utah, but at the same time, it's just, I don't know. It frustrates me because I can see the kid's perspective on this and I can see his perspective on it. But for her, it's just, she's been selfish the entire time. Mm-hmm. It's like what she wants when she wants it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. All right. So that was it for them. Like, they only had the one little scene. So let's move on to Shane, Lacey, and John.
Oh, goodness.
I know.
This was sad.
It was also sad.
Yeah.
Yes. This is the other one where it was one character was led to believe that somebody else was dead when they were not.
Oh, goodness. Oh, I know, right? Yeah. So Lacey's worried about John. And so she decides to stalk him just to see how he's doing. And I mean, I guess I thought at the beginning that she was being a little dramatic about things.
Right.
But considering how things ended up.
What ended up being true.
You know, looking back. Yeah, it was kind of like, oh, okay, so that's legitimate. You know, and coming from a world where I don't have people like this in my life, I can judge and be like, oh, you're being dramatic, girl. Like.
Right.
He's dead or in jail, seriously? Uh-huh, right.
Uh-huh.
And then it's like, oh, he was one of the two. Oh, okay.
Okay.
Okay, that was... I'm sorry. You were right.
Backing off. Yeah. Yeah. But it was funny because... So they had their little... They had a shouting match, and she went off to go stalk. Really just... You say stalk. It was more of a stakeout. Like, she was just sitting outside of John's house waiting for him to come home. Because he clearly wasn't home.
Sure.
And then... I don't know. And then Shane went to... Shane and his buddy went to... some junky ass bar, like a really junky bar. like with
right.
I don't think they were like folding tables and panel board. And it's like, it was not the kind of bar, and this is what I thought was weird about it. It didn't seem like the kind of place that you order a Long Island iced tea, but they both ordered Long Island iced teas.
Oh, goodness. Well, I feel like that's the place you do order a Long Island iced tea because you can't be sober for that situation.
No, I feel like it's a place where if you do, they're going to have to like wipe the dust off the liquor bottle before they open it because they just serve beer to everybody. Goodness. They just have a cooler in the back.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, so I was confused who this older friend is.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's like, okay, so you Shane didn't know him is kind of young. How do you have older friends? It's, you know, because I feel like you get older friends from work. Mm-hmm. Shane doesn't work, you know, unless this is a prison buddy.
Could totally be a prison buddy.
That was the only thing I could think of because it did seem weird. But I was going to say the older friend actually had some pretty sound advice.
He did. He really did.
You know?
Yeah.
Trying to put things in perspective for him.
Right.
He was like, and he also said that he needs to give her the benefit of the doubt if he trusts her.
Mm-hmm. And if you're going to be together, you have to trust her and know that she has a history. He's like, you have a history. She has a history. It was good advice all around. And Shane seemed to be okay taking it. Actually.
Right. Yeah, but he does put threats out to John if Lacey sees him. Like,
what a stupid ass.
It's like, isn't that how you got into prison in the first place?
Like, so what you're gonna do is you're gonna get revenge on this guy by letting him put you back in jail. Like that's your plan. That's your plan. That's how you're gonna get him.
Oh my goodness.
Owned.
We never said Shane was the smart one in this thruple. So yeah, John is back in jail for DWI, so driving and drugs. And Lacey finds out because she just decides to call, you know, the local sheriff's office.
Yeah.
Say, do you have this person?
That was disturbing enough that she just knew, like, the number to the sheriff's office and you can just call and ask if a person's there. Like, she knew this was all. I wouldn't even think to do that at all. Like, that's a possibility. I can just call and ask if somebody by this name is there. Wow. Not her first rodeo.
Right. I know. That does make me sad for her. So then she seemed a little over the top sad for John to me. Mm-hmm. So kind of once again, like maybe I just don't empathize or relate to the situation as much. I accused her of being overdramatic, you know, saying, oh, he's... So, I mean, I'll give her the benefit of the doubt, but it did seem a little over the top to me.
I mean, it did say if you didn't know what the sheriff had said on the phone and you'd have been like, it's equally likely she's calling the hospital or the jail and then saw how she reacted, you would think, oh, she called the hospital.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true because it's like, well, he's in jail. I mean, he's safe. I mean, at least physically he's safe.
Right.
Well, as safe as you can be in prison, I have no idea. But, you know, he's not dead.
Right. Like it's... I almost feel like your first reaction would be like it's bittersweet. It's like both because your first is that you're glad he's not dead,
right?
But you're also super disappointed that he fucked up again. Like it's both at the same time,
right? Yeah. So then they have an awkward conversation, Lacey and Shane, where Lacey is telling him that John is gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this is another situation where you're like, what does it mean by John being gone?
Because Shane even asked, do you mean dead?
Yeah, right?
That's what he's gone usually means.
Yes. What is wrong with these people? Why do they keep on referring to prison like it's like this one-way street to never seeing this person again? Mm-hmm. So Shane is actually super happy.
Oh, yeah.
And now he has hope about their marriage. He's like, oh, I think we can make the marriage work now that John is out of the picture. And it's kind of like, if you have to be worried about this guy, there are going to be other guys you're going to have to worry about.
Yes, definitely. Because this guy's not. Well, this guy, at least there's a history there. And
yeah.
If nothing else, this show is about how hard it is for some people to get out of their own romantic history. And like...
Right.
So that is something that's going to be different than any other guy that comes along. As much of a upgrade as those other guys could obviously and potentially be.
I actually think this is worse for their situation in a way. So Shane thinks that Lacey is coming to her senses. And I'm like, what do you mean she's coming to her senses? This wasn't her choice. He went to jail. Mm-hmm. She had no control over the situation. So right. How can you even say she's coming to her senses? And I think that with John in jail, that it is very easy for someone like Lacey to kind of fantasize about their relationship in a positive way because there's no one there kind of reminding her and proving her that that's not how it is in reality. Mm-hmm. You know, she doesn't have access to John. And so in her mind, she could very easily be like, John was such a great man. He took care of, you know, his kids like they were his own. And he's not there to be a mess or dramatic or yell at her to really prove her otherwise. And so it's very easy for her on the day-to-day to see Shane and feel like, oh, this guy, and true. Then romanticize, you know, John.
Well, the other thing is I feel like, at least it seems like the relationship between, you know, Lacey and John is the what really attracts her to John. And even in this episode, which she feels you have to go, is feeling like he needs help and he needs support and he needs taken care of and he can't get it from anybody but me. And that kind of keeps going when he's in prison. Like, he still needs help. He's still there. He's still in trouble. Whereas, like, the thing I think that would kill the relationship, you know, her relationship and her attraction to John the most is if he was clean and taking care of himself and she didn't have to worry about him, then she wouldn't. I feel like that would make her not care more than anything else.
I don't really know, because I feel like he was doing pretty good when he first got out of prison, and that didn't seem to bother her.
No, perhaps.
You know, she wasn't. Yeah. Well, to your point, maybe that's the reason why she wasn't attracted to him, and maybe that's why she went for Shane. I don't know. Maybe you're onto something.
Maybe.
Okay. Oh, Dr. O. With his psychology.
Did you see the throwaway
no.
thing with them with the tattoos?
No.
Oh, I see? Didn't. They
so
do this.
Apparently we miss things, when they're tied to the commercials.
When they're tied to the commercials. They had one, and it was Lacey talking to some random friend about how her and Shane got matching tattoos. And they
I
got
didn't
each other's...
notice that he had a Lacey tattoo.
No, you didn't. Because the deal was that she kind of picked the idea. And he would pick the location. Uh-huh. So she picked they would get each other's name tattooed, which is the stupidest idea anybody ever had. I've known more than one person with their ex-wife tattooed on their arm.
Oh, gosh.
But he picked the location. And go ahead and guess where Shane would pick a location for somebody to get a tattoo.
For her?
Oh, they would both get in the same place.
I don't... No, and I'm scared now if they're both the same place. Because I'm thinking their anatomy isn't... the same. So it's like, I was like,
right.
On his dick? I don't know, but she doesn't have a dick.
No, she doesn't. So officially, her tattoo is on her pelvis, is the way she put it.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
So his tattoo is, I'm going to guess, we didn't get specifics, but in the same general vicinity. And that's how smart Shane is. That's what he picked.
You are right that I did not see the tattoo. And now I'm remembering what it is that I did see. Thank God. I was like, no, I swear it was on his arm. I was thinking Clint has Tracy tattooed to his arm.
Yes, that's true.
Okay, and Tracy and Lacey. Okay, so I was like, no, I'm pretty sure I saw that tattoo. Okay, good. No, I did not see Shane's tattoo, thankfully. Although I'm sure if I would like to donate to his cam girl, whatever.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure just one Cash App payment. You can see it if you want to.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I can see all the tattoos.
Oh.
All right. So, who do you want to talk about next? Well, this will be process of elimination because you say you're leaving your favorite to last.
Yeah. Well, favorite was the most fun. I want to end on some fun. So, there's two left, and one of them was definitely not fun. And that's Marcelino and Brittany.
Okay. That's why I was like, oh, they're your favorite? They're just kind of
No.
Yeah, I felt bad for Brittany. Like, actually, a lot.
Very much
so. I really felt for her. Yeah. So we find out that Brittany's mom is an alcoholic, and then Brittany kind of talks more about her childhood, which she did reveal a little bit about, like when she was on it the first time, but not to this extent.
Right.
So, I mean, but Brittany's willing to forgive, and I just really, really like Brittany. She just seems like such, at the heart of it, a good person, or at least trying to be a good person, and just... you know, product of circumstance in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. She just had a really shitty hand dealt to her and, you know, made some bad decisions. I'm not saying she's perfect, but it just, it made me feel really, really bad.
Yeah, and I did appreciate that, like, when she talked to Marcelino about it, that mom moving to Las Vegas and this, and he had reservations that I thought he, like, tactfully mm-hmm. kind of put forward, because she's like, oh, she could help out with the kids. And, mm-hmm. I mean, not to put too blunt a point at it, his point is, but she was a shitty mom. Why do we want her around our kids?
Yeah.
I don't want that person raising my kids.
Yeah. I think Brittany just really wants help, mm-hmm. it seems like. And especially if she's trying to go back to school and be a student, that's right. really difficult to have to juggle. And so I think Brittany may be thinking of it more from a logistics standpoint. And Marcelino is kind of like, yeah, but.
Right.
So Brittany reveals that the reason why her mom was not so good to her was because she was an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. And I would say the saddest part of the story is Brittany said that when she was 13 or 14, that she ran away from home because she was really upset with how things were. And they were living in hotels. And so she came back and they had moved
on. They were just gone.
And so she didn't even know how to find her family. And that to me is just so, so sad.
Yeah. Yeah. Because there's like, didn't even leave, like, God, to like move on and not. I don't even know. I don't even know how you can
try to find her. Yeah, something.
Try to find her. Try to like leave something at the hotels so that she knows where you went.
Yeah,
or
leave
something.
A message.
Yeah, something. Like right. I couldn't. Yeah, I mean.
And how did you not report this to the police to like try find your kid?
Yeah, I don't know, because there's always that myth of like, oh, they have to be missing for 24 hours. They do not have to be missing for 24 hours. Yeah. As soon as you don't know where your kid is, you can tell the police about it when they're because I think she was like what 12 or 13. Yeah, you. That's.
Yeah.
That's okay.
And so Brittany, so then Brittany says that, you know, because she was basically homeless when she was really young, she kind of fell in with the wrong crowd and she was young and dumb and she just wanted these friends to like her and she probably needed them too for shelter and mm-hmm. food and things like that because not like she can work. And so she ended up, you know, kind of being the pawn in some of their burglary schemes.
Yeah,
and so always, in an indirect way, she blames her mom for her going to prison.
Yeah. I mean, well, okay. So the thing that always, I'm often bothered by people using that phrase, they fell in with the wrong crowd. Because so many times it's like, okay, no, they choose to hang around with those people. They like got into what they were in because they were mm-hmm. into that too. And if I asked any one of those kids' parents what happened with their kids, they would all say they fell in with the wrong crowd because your kid would be, quote unquote, the wrong crowd. But in this circumstance, like it was grown people that were like taking advantage and abusing her. It wasn't like some sort of mutual teenage group. It was like absolutely abuse, absolutely, you know, grooming and everything like that. So.
Oh, sure. Because she did get pregnant. She said really young.
Yeah. And it was she said she was 12 and the guy was, she was 12 when they started dating or whatever. And the guy was like 34.
Right.
It was just gross. It was so sad. Yeah. So sad.
Yeah. So Marcelino thinks that Cindy isn't ready to hear these things that Brittany has to say, but Brittany says she just wants to clear the air so they can move forward. So mm-hmm. Brittany's mom, I just felt like just got really sad. I don't know if she was ready to hear it or not. I mean, but when would you ever be ready to hear that?
Yeah, you can't.
No, I don't think so either. But I guess maybe at a place in your life where you're more receptive to it. And so in that sense, I think this is as good as it's going to get because she did. She had a lot of remorse and regret for what happened. And mm-hmm. she said she wanted to do better. But it sounds like, you know, there was a cycle already going on because it sounded like Cindy's parents were kind of the same.
Yeah. It does. It does. And yeah, I mean, and I don't know. It's one of the things I thought Cindy did better the second time they started to talk when she talked to mm-hmm. her at the park where she had lived when she was homeless.
Yeah.
But like the first time she kind of hinted and started getting at stuff at like the first when they were having dinner when she first got there. And Cindy started doing that. I just tried my best. And sometimes it's like, That's not a helpful thing to say. It doesn't add to the conversation. Right. It doesn't matter to me. It's like, okay, well, your best wasn't good enough. I don't know what you want me to say to, I tried your best. Thank you. I mean, it still wasn't good enough.
Right. Look at where we're at. So, right. Yeah, I wouldn't know what to say to that either. Okay. I think we can move on from them, right?
Yes. Let's move on from them.
Okay, so your favorite was Meghan Michael Sarah.
Meghan Michael and Sarah. I like that. It was just... Oh, because... Okay, so in this one, we have people who are total shitheads, but they're shitheads in a fun way.
Yeah.
Not in a sad way.
Yeah, it's definitely more entertaining, definitely.
Yeah, this is the most entertaining.
Yeah, there's a lot of other things on here. Yeah, that's just sad. You're right.
All right, okay, so we start with a visit to a lawyer. I like this lawyer. This
okay.
lawyer was a normal, what I expect a lawyer to look like. I feel like so many times in these shows we see lawyers and it's like, why would you go to them? Like, I want a lawyer who at least combs her hair. What are you doing?
Yeah. So Sarah says that Michael hasn't seen the kids since he got off of probation, which I don't know. That makes me sad too, because I feel like he's one of those guys that just makes it look like he's a good dad. And it sounds like he was kind of FaceTiming, you know, with his other ladies, his sugar mamas around to kind of garner sympathy, I'm sure.
Oh,
yeah. Because, you know, he's supposed to be paying child support, and so he needs money. How can he possibly support this kid?
Oh, and I guarantee when he's talking to these other women, he's putting up, oh, this crazy bitch won't let me see my kids. I just love him so much. So I want to guarantee he's playing that up. No doubt.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely. Agreed. So, yeah, Sarah says he was a better dad in prison. That's true. But she's still wearing her wedding ring.
Oh, I didn't even see that.
Yeah. So, I don't know. She should pawn that.
Right, right. Anyway, the one thing that got me was, okay, so I think she said it seemed like she should definitely pawn the wedding ring. Everything he ever gave her, she should pawn.
Right.
But, like, okay, so she said that he is talking to other women all the time. And then she said, like, he's FaceTiming the daughters with the other women around. Like,
right.
And did she just mean Meghan? Or did she mean all the other women?
I don't know. It's hard to say how many women are actually involved and how many women that he's actually meeting up with. Because I feel like all the women are from far away, out of state. And I feel like he does that intentionally because he's just trying to scam them out of money.
Yes.
He's not actually interested in having all these relationships.
Correct. Yes, that's true. That's true.
Right. So, I don't know. Maybe the ones that pay the most, they get like a visit.
A visit, right.
Because he can pay for his travel.
Well, I'm sure if they pay for his travel, they might get a visit.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. So, Sarah finds out that child support could be as little as $25 a month. I was like, wow, that's crazy.
Why even? It seems like the administrative costs are worse than that. Just $25 a month.
I know, right? That's so little.
Mm-hmm. But it becomes hard because you can't, if his cash flow is, you know, random transactions from Cash App, they can't like garnish his wages or anything. He's not getting any wages.
Right. That's true. You can't garnish wages. Yeah, but the lawyer seems to think that if they can establish that is a stream of income and that he has money, that they can go for something more than $25 a month. And once again, that's just a minimum in that state. So
right, right, right. But I think Sarah was like, yeah, whatever we can get is good with me. Just take it from him. Because she doesn't even like need it. At this point, and you don't want child support to be this, because it's not supposed to be this, is like, it's, no, this is a punishment. Give me my damn child support. It's not in any way.
Right.
That is not how child support is supposed to work. That is not how alimony is supposed to work. Like, there's not supposed to be some sort of punish payment when people get divorced.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a very careful line. Because she says she doesn't need the money.
Mm-hmm.
So, but what she is concerned about is that Michael will try to take the kids away because currently they don't have any agreement in place because technically they're still married.
Right, right. Yeah. And that's something that this will help establish too. If you can prove it, he hasn't been paying the child support that he's supposed to be paying, which means you have to have him supposed to be paying child support first. and his income stream is, you know, random strangers cash-apping him money, then, yeah, it's going to be a little easier to get custody of the children.
Yeah, definitely. So then we cut to Michael being sick in the hotel. And Megan she's coming over, brought him chicken noodle soup.
Uh-huh.
And then while Michael is supposedly sleeping, then Megan tries to get in his phone.
This seemed suspect to me. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Sick was hungover, right? Was he really sick or was he just hungover?
I think sick because he wasn't talking normally. Like, his voice sounded a little different.
Because he doesn't seem like he stays sick this whole segment. Like, he is definitely way less sick at the end than he is at the beginning.
Oh, right. Yeah, at the beginning, he's like barely like, oh, I can barely get out of bed. Like, thank you for bringing my soup.
I'm just too weak to eat this, but I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, all of a sudden, Megan's on his phone. He
snaps up, yeah.
He's like, I need my phone now. Where is it? And he's like up and about. He's well enough to invite his friend Rock over to have it out with Rock.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And all of a sudden, once Megan took his phone, all of a sudden he was no longer even a little bit sick.
No, exactly. Boom. Nope. He was not sick at all because Michael says she was being sneaky.
You know, like that sneaky like stuff. That's too much. She's taking sneaky actions.
Yes, key actions. Yep. He says, overbearing and clingy women push him away.
I mean,
it's like, oh gosh.
At this point, his overbearing and clingy is just like, hey, women who know what I'm up to, I can't deal with that. They have to be oblivious fools for me. Like, why is she checking my phone?
It's
like, because you are using it to text other women. Like, you can't, like, why would she be suspicious about my phone? You know why she's suspicious about your phone, because you're doing a crappy job hiding stuff.
Right, absolutely. Because I was going to say, like, people who are not overbearing and clingy would be people that aren't suspicious of what you're doing. And I feel like he says that overbearing and clingy women push him away. But I kind of feel like he's already 1 foot out the door. And that's the reason why they become that way.
Right.
Because they're insecure in their relationship. And they're just trying to get affirmation from him. And I think, like, that's a struggle just in general with psychology of relationships. Is like that constant push and pull of things. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, that's even absent the other women. That's just how normal people do that. And same thing in relationships, the acting distant and clinging. And then they have a word for it. Oh crap. What was it called? It's a cycle of something. It exists. It's a real relationship thing. Ah, crap.
Oh, I believe you. I absolutely believe you because I definitely think that that's a thing like in relationships, you know, it's like, that's why I think it's so hard to get two people on the same page. Like, even when it comes to not even that you're in a relationship with dating, it's like if one person likes the other person more, just like psychologically, it makes the person who likes them less like you less, you know, when you start showing all of that. So, yeah, it's definitely a careful balance.
All right. So it's at this point that Rock shows up unannounced to Megan. Right, Megan had no idea Rock was coming.
Yes, and Rock, right. So Rock thinks that Michael isn't being fair to Megan, so they have like a outside conversation, just the two of them, because Michael doesn't think that Megan is telling him the truth. It's like, oh, really? You think someone's lying to you?
To you?
But you're always lying to other people. Why are you suspicious?
Well, it's definitely, it's narcissistic behavior. Like, no, I get to do that way, and nobody gets to treat me like that. Nobody gets to treat me like I try to other people. That's not gonna work for him, which is, you know,
right. So yeah, Rock says that they had sex and Michael hits him.
It was a weak ass hit. He kind of,
yeah, but I was gonna say it was like barely. Yeah,
and like he never actually said we had sex. He just did that thing, well, you know, one thing then another, and yeah, like,
no, I think he explicitly said,
okay,
yeah, like, oh yeah, we had sex.
No, I think you did. I think you're right. And then the weak-ass hand slap. Yes.
Yeah. So Michael thinks guy code, but at the same time, he'll screw over any woman and not feel bad about it. So he thinks that breaking guy code is vindictive.
Yeah, the guy code is, yeah. That's not what vindictive means. It's a word that he used that meant some sort of bad behavior. So he was like, that's vindictive stuff. Like, he wasn't getting revenge on you.
Right.
Like, that's not what it means.
No.
But he definitely is way more upset that his guy friend would, you know, or as he said it, have sex with his bitch, then he would be that Megan is cheating on him.
Oh gosh, it sounds so funny when you say it. I just feel like, okay, Michael cannot claim anyone if he's has a bunch of women like in the wings. It's like, you can't claim everybody, because I feel like that's what he's trying to do. Like, you can't hook up with any of my bitches, mm-hmm. but all of them are my bitches. And it's like, well, no, it doesn't really work like that. You get one.
One bitch. Who is your one? One bitch for everybody.
Yes, that's it. You get one. So, guess what? Rock did not sleep with Sarah, so maybe she's your one.
Yeah, maybe you should go back there.
So that leaves Megan up for whatever, you know? So they get back and include Megan in on this conversation. And then Megan is just, she just seems so pathetic to me in this, the whole rest of the segment. Yeah. She says she just used him for comfort. She denies that she slept with Rock. Okay, so who do you think is lying, Rock or Megan?
I thought about this a lot. And what I decided was, I don't care. I don't care. Like, I don't know. I don't know. And I don't care. I actually would be more likely to believe that it was Rock that is lying.
That and they was lying?
Didn't
or...
have sex. Yes. I think Rock has this, you know, bit of toxic masculinity that is like, no, no, no. You can't just make out with a girl and have it end at that. That's weird. You had to seal the deal. Like, of course, if you made out with her, you had sex with her. Like, of course.
I actually think Megan is the one that's lying. I think she has more to lose in this situation. I mean, what does Rock gain by lying but an enemy out of Michael?
I don't think he's that much of an enemy anyway. Like, I think, I don't know. I think it's a weird bro relationship that they have. And it's like, bro, you couldn't even, you're going to kiss her? You didn't even have sex with her? What is that? What is that? So you still got her, but you didn't even finish it? Like, you know.
But I don't know. I just feel like also Megan just looked really guilty to me. And I just, Megan has issues. And I just feel like, and I'm not saying Rock doesn't have issues too.
Right.
But
I also just wonder if it's, if they did something that, you know, this is the other way it goes, something that Rock considers to be sex and Megan does not consider to be sex.
That's possible. Maybe. Yeah. So I'm just like, Megan, come on. Why are you so hung up on Michael? Rock is so much better looking. I don't get it at all.
I don't know.
Rock was down for her.
Yeah, he was definitely down for her. He was definitely, he is definitely way more into her than Michael is.
Yes. And it's like, go with that. Plus, it appears that he lives in her area.
Yes.
So it's like, I don't even understand why this is even a question. Like, you should be going for Rock.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Michael, yeah. Go away.
Yeah. Okay. So then Megan, you know, now that that girl goes down, confronts Michael directly about, you know, are you talking to women on your phone? To other women on your phone? Mm-hmm. To where at this point, now that he's all pissed off, he's just like, yes. Yes, I am. And that's my business. Yeah. Why do you give a shit? Like,
yeah.
So then he does the
thing. He says he wants someone who is super loyal. And it's like, well, duh, Sarah. She was super loyal. And you still screwed her over, so.
What's the difference between loyal and overbearing and clingy? Those, like, go together. You can't get loyal and not get at least his perception of what clingy and overbearing is. That's like, they're kind of the same thing. So.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know what he wants.
No, he wants excuses to go out. He wants excuses to keep doing what he's been doing and not have everything be his fault, obviously.
They say he picks the most insecure women, calls them queen, and, you know, that's how he gets them.
Yeah.
He says Megan is his queen. That's what, like, the big quote was from first season was, is, you know, I married Sarah. Sarah's my wife, but Megan, she my queen. That's what he said.
Yeah. But she's not, like, obviously not. That's just talk. I don't know. He's so obviously transparently full of shit that I don't understand how anybody listens to anything he says. Like, transparently. Oh. Because then the part that, right before we cut that off, he made me even more mad than everything. He was drinking the damn hotel water. God, pissed me off.
Oh, God.
You know how much that water costs? Damn. He ain't got no money.
Yeah, well, one of those women will pay for it. They must. So.
They must. All right, so then we switch back to Sarah. There's a lot of these, them. Switch back to Sarah, who's going out with What's her friend? Emmy? Emmy is her friend?
Emmy.
Okay.
I love Emmy. Yeah. She's great. Well, but let me tell you, when she gets drunk, she gets a little spicy.
Yeah. She was
definitely was a little firecracker.
Yeah. She was like pushing her into that guy's lap, man. She was like, you guys can do it.
Pretty much.
Like, you want me to lock the door, lock the car door? You guys can just go do it. Like, oh man. She didn't say that, but that seems what she was hinting at. She was like, go for it. Go for it. So they go out drinking.
Yep. So they meet a dude called Nate, and I swear he looked like a young Snoop Dogg.
I could see that. I could see that. He was definitely had that, like, nerdcore thing kind of going on where he had, like, you know, he had the big glasses and the hat, like, pulled down to him. Like, he was, I could see what you're with the Snoop Dogg. He had that kind of speech vibe of like Snoop Dogg does.
Yeah, that too. Yep. So Emmy keeps on trying to push her into Snoop Dogg.
Literally Nate. Pushing to Snoop Nate. Yeah. Like, physically pushing her into him. While she's talking.
He's into it, though.
Oh, no, he's definitely into it.
Yeah. So I understand where Emmy is coming from, because I feel like as a woman, you've all had friends like this. You all have a girlfriend who's hung up on someone, and you're just like, they just need to get them out of their system. They just need to either hook up, go on a date, do anything with someone else, and you know that you will realize, that person will realize that the person they're hung up on is really just not worth it. So I feel like that's Emmy. She's just like, okay, we just need to get you out and about. You need to just make out with the next person we see, this guy. Yeah, I'm going to shove you into him.
Yeah, I agree with that, but it's got, I would take out the go on a date part. It's got to be something physical, like making out or hooking up or something. Because if they go like on a date, all she's going to do
with girls is different.
All she's going to do is talk about him, is talk about the ex.
Yeah. Possible. I think that's how guys think. They're like, oh, you just need to sleep with someone else and you get it out of your system.
I didn't say necessarily sleep with somebody else, but I was just saying, like,
I think that's how guys think about it.
Maybe. That might be true. That might be true.
Yeah. I was going to say, all my guy friends, like, if they're going through a breakup, they're like, oh, I just need to hook up with someone else. Like, then I'll be fine. Well, actually, they don't think that. The person who's, like, upset is just, like, stuck in their little cloud of depression. It's the other guy friends who are like, oh, we just need to go out, have a rager, you should hook up with some random, like, and you'll be fine. You'll forget about your girlfriend or your ex-girlfriend.
I think it works that way.
I feel like that's how guys approach breakups.
Yeah.
At least for each other, maybe not for themselves.
Right. Well, Well, obviously, because the guy that she was at him for himself is, like, needs the other guys to pull him out to do that.
Yeah, true. So, okay, what I noticed about their segments is that anytime it's Michael, Sarah, Megan, they're always playing thug rap music.
Yeah, interesting.
Sometimes with Lamar and Andrea as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then everybody else, that never happens. It's just like, oh my gosh, Sharp, let's get woke here.
Right.
Like, let's not stereotype the kind of music you think that people should be listening to. It would make more sense with Andrea and Lamar just because he's trying to be a rapper, but just because Megan and Michael are black doesn't mean you have to play, like, rap music all the time.
My guess would be Michael definitely listens to rap music a lot, and Megan probably doesn't as much. They just...
Yeah.
But I'm going at, because, heck, Michael and Rock, remember, he said, we were boys, we sold drugs together. Like, we're down. Like, oh. All right, but then we get to... We ended it. It was the last scene. It was my favorite scene of the show. My favorite scene of both of them.
Okay.
Was this last scene of Michael, like, playing his game on somebody on the phone. Right? Just because.
Right.
It was such weak shit. I was like, how is this working with so many women? I don't understand.
Oh, my gosh.
He's just like,
she even seemed to be getting skeptical. She was like, uh-huh, I'll see it when I see it. You know, that kind of attitude, like, whatever you say.
Didn't even say that he wasn't charming. He was just like, hey, baby, I'm going to holler at you. Oh, yeah, you sexy in that swimsuit.
Uh-huh.
Like, what? That? How is that working?
Right, sure. Yeah. And then she's like, well, when are you going to come out and see me? I don't know. I'm going to try.
I'm going to try.
Uh-huh. You keep saying that. Yeah, she's definitely started to get real skeptical.
She did, but, like,
you could tell she was still kind of in it.
Yeah. She was definitely playful with it and still kind of, but she called him. It's not like he called her.
Yeah.
So I just don't understand. I guess, well, part of it is, I guess he's a little bit far into the game where he's kind of playing a distant, you know, he's pulling back and being a little more distant so that she'll chase him a little bit more. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't think this is how you can start those relationships, but it just seemed so, so weak. And I was so confused, you know, between back all the way back to Tony, it was the same kind of thing. It's like, how is this working? I don't understand.
I don't either. But then he once again says he doesn't want to be in a relationship that will invade his business.
Mm-hmm.
He loses interest when there's cheating. It's like, really? But you're the one who's cheating.
All right. Well,
like, these girls are not cheating on you. I don't know why you. Oh, Megan. Megan was the only one. But Sarah, I mean, she didn't cheat on you. And you originally cheated on Sarah with Megan.
Mm-hmm. Right. But he got disinterested when she got jealous about that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's justifying his mind. He's trying to convince us. He's not doing a good job. But
no.
Okay. So this is the other thing that Wint said, because I don't know if you caught it. I caught this and laughed my ass off. Because he said, you know, I'm starting to get it. What's love got to do with it? Nothing, right? And he says, like Aretha Franklin said. It's like, that was Tina Turner.
Yep, Tina Turner. Nope, I got it. Yeah.
At the end of you could just see his face when he said that was just like, that was a smart thing to say. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm so proud of myself. I'm awesome.
Yep. And I laughed and laughed and laughed.
But he says he's just trying to satisfy every itch. I was like, oh God, gross. No, I don't want to picture that. Kind of sounds like an STD.
Yeah,
to me.
You should have a doctor check that out.
Yeah, right. Oh goodness. Okay. So did you have a student of the week?
I did. I went with Brittany.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yes, I went with Brittany.
I support that. Because
that was a really hard thing to tell her mother that mm-hmm. probably needed to be said. So it kind of took a lot of courage to bring all that out, you know, bring all that to the forefront and try to clear the air and try to like make some healing happen. So I thought that was a good job for her.
Okay. Mine this week was a fringe character. We have Donna Faye, and I get it that, you know, Angela is not always going to listen to Donna Faye, but why I think she's student of the week is Donna Faye knows what's up. Mm-hmm. She knows how it should be. She knows how it's going to be, and she's going to try to help out when she can, offer support when she can, but, you know, there's so much that Donna Faye can do, and she's doing it.
All right. So, actually, that leads right into my dunce, because my dunce was Angela, because, like, we can see, everybody sees the train coming, and we know where she's going, and, like, I don't know, it also, for her specifically, I really feel like, she knows better, and she should know better, and this is unacceptable.
Yeah, absolutely. So my dunce this week was actually Shane. I just felt like, Shane, come on. Like, there were so many, like, dumb things he said this week, like saying that Lacey, you know, came to her senses. It's like, not really, dude. She did not come to her senses. She was forced into this situation, but you somehow think it's turning out different. Shane for threatening John, you know, it's just mm-hmm. I don't. Yeah. Shane, come on. Be better. Just be better.
Be better.
What about your life lesson?
Okay. So going back to my favorite guy, Michael, at the very end, after he messed up the name that tune, right? They saw him like getting himself put together and he was putting a rosary on. Like, a rosary is not a necklace.
Oh.
Stop it. He was like carrying a rosary and he put it around his neck. I'm like, stop it. Rosaries are not necklaces. That's my life lesson.
I feel like he would, yes, especially someone who was raised Catholic, because I feel like Michael would just like burst in flames if he walked into a Catholic church.
Right. Well, okay. So I looked it up apparently, and that's why it makes me a little more concerned about Michael. You know, slightly. Apparently, sometimes that is like a gang thing. Like, there are gangs who like do that. That's like their identification is wearing rosaries. Like, yeah. So let's hope that's not the case.
Yeah. Nah, I hope so too. All right. So my life lesson comes from Clint and his parents, Alice and Kendall. And I just feel like Alice and Kendall are really focusing on Tracy as the issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like you kind of when it comes to your own children, yes, absolutely. Pay attention to who they're hanging out with, who they're friends with. But instead of blaming the friends, I think you need to also look at your children, because it's possible that they're also, you know, mixed up in the wrong things. Mm-hmm. And instead of kind of placing blame on other people, saying that they're being negative influences, really kind of take ownership for the fact of your child is also choosing this.
Right.
And they're probably involved more than you would want to believe. Because I definitely feel like there's denial happening there between Alice and Kendall, which is why Clint isn't getting the help that he needs as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sounds good.
Yeah. Because Clint looks rough.
Yeah. It's not very much so. Very much so. All right. So we're caught up now, right?
Yes, we are caught up.
Okay. Awesome. So that means next week we're just going to cover one episode, and it's going to be the new episode that comes out on Friday.
Yes. And we have figured out a schedule, and I know it's not super ideal in terms of, you know, getting this podcast out right when the episodes come out, but just based on the fact that we do a 90 Day Fiancé podcast, we are scheduling this to come out on Tuesdays. Yes. So you can expect new episodes for us on Tuesdays covering the previous new episode from the Friday.
Because we do not want to record this on Friday or Saturday, because unlike most of the people in this show, we're allowed to go out at night. So we do.
Yes. And we don't have a curfew.
Yeah.
So, and if you watch 90 Day Fiancé, check out our other podcast, 90 Day Fiancé MK. And either, if you're listening to either one of those, and you happen to give us a rating, that would really help us out for what?
Visibility. Yeah, that's right. For visibility.
Visibility. Yes, there you go.
All right. We want more people to hear the podcast. We want more people to enjoy what we're having to do. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
All right. So spread the love.
That's right.
Spread the love.
And we'll see everybody next week.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Mm-hmm. All right. Bye.
Bye. Good.